This is Judaism Unbound, episode 45, Hanukkah Unbound. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dan Liebenson.
And I'm Lex Rofus.
And we're here today to look back on the last four episodes where we've either focused exclusively on Hanukkah or talked about Hanukkah in a substantial way. We've put together a bunch of ideas about Hanukkah, and we're looking forward to looking over them today with our special guest, Rabbi Ruth Abish Magder. She is, in addition to being an old friend and one of the best Jewish educators that I've ever encountered, she is the rabbi in residence and director of education at Bechol Lashon, which is an organization dedicated to the ethnic, cultural, and racial inclusiveness in Judaism. I love a line in their mission statement where they say, "We foster an expanding Jewish community that embraces its differences." So Ruth is the rabbi in residence and director of education at this organization, Bechol Lashon. She has a lot of other accolades, a lot of other experience that you can check it out on the Bechol Lashon website. And we are excited to welcome her for this conversation about Hanukkah. Before we jump into the conversation, I just want to say a couple of things. Number one, we really encourage you to visit the website that we've created about Hanukkah. And we've put together a lot of really fun and interesting ideas, we think, about Hanukkah, including special guests from the Jewish past that you can invite to your Hanukkah to light the candles with you, a playlist of music, ideas for lighting the menorah in all kinds of different ways, and even a bunch of different drinks that you can have every night that symbolize different aspects of Hanukkah. And we're really excited about a lot of those resources, and we hope that you'll head over there and try them out and let us know what you think. So the URL is www.judaismunbound.com/Hanukkah. That's H-A-N-U-K-K-A-H. So head over there, check out the resources, and let us know what you think. We also want to ask you at this point, toward the end of the year, when people tend to make their end-of-year charitable donations, to consider supporting our work at Judaism Unbound with a donation, either a one-time donation, or you could sign up to make a recurring monthly donation all throughout the rest of the coming year, 2017. We'd be excited about either one of those, even more excited about both. We really need your support. We're excited about being able to build an organization that has thousands of users, all of whom are making a relatively modest amount of a contribution. But in order for us to be able to do that, we really need your help. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization under our parent organization, the Institute for the Next Jewish Future. So if you go to our website, www.judaismunbound.com/donate, you can find there links to all kinds of ways to make a donation, and that will be tax deductible. So thank you so much for supporting our work. Now let's jump into our conversation about Hanukkah with Rabbi Ruth Abish Magder. Ruth, it is so great to have you on Judaism Unbound. We're really excited about this conversation.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
All right. Well, when I'm thinking back on the ideas that we've been listening to, the first thing that really strikes me, and Lex and I have talked about this in the past, that a lot of times people talk about Hanukkah and say, but it's just a minor holiday. And it really feels like in America in the 21st century, that is simply not true.
No.
I mean, if you're if you're a rabbi or someone who, and you are a rabbi, but I mean, if one is a rabbi who, you know, kind of wants to look at Hanukkah as it has been seen through much of Jewish history, then yes, it would be accurate to say, I think, that Hanukkah is a relatively minor holiday. But if we're talking about, we brought in the whole Jewish sensibilities thing a few months ago, and the idea of, like, part of determining what kind of a holiday this is looking at the Jews themselves and saying, are they treating it as a minor holiday or a major holiday? We see the Jews and they're treating it as a major holiday. So,
yeah.
Right? So the question is, do you say to them, hey, you guys are wrong. It's a minor holiday. Stop treating it like a major holiday.
You can say whatever you want. They'll ignore you anyway.
Exactly. Or do you just kind of say, hey, New situation. Hanukkah has become a major holiday. Now, what kind of a major holiday should it be? So that's kind of a starting point, I think, of that I think is worth talking about a little bit.
I mean, the question of whether it's a minor or a major holiday, that ship has left long ago. It's a major holiday for most American Jews. And it's one of the holidays that, as I think, as Diane Ashton said, it's become really important in no small part because we focus around the kids and we've also focused around what our community standards are. And you can say, well, it's proximity and we shouldn't, just because it's part of the Christmas phenomena. We shouldn't. But at the same time, you know, if you talk to parents around the country, they're really clear. If their kids are attending public school, most of their friends aren't Jewish, if they don't have something that's compelling, their kids are going to be longing for something. I'm a rabbi. My husband's a Jewish educator. When we lived in New Jersey, we lived on a block which was kind of like a United Nations, where we celebrated different holidays with different families and different communities. And my daughter, we celebrated Christmas with our Christian friends. It was their holiday. They celebrated Hanukkah with us and Sukkot and all sorts of other things. But when we moved away, we no longer did Christmas because it had been their holiday. So my Jewish daughter with rabbi mom, Jewish educator dad, went out, found a piece of pine tree, dragged it home. She was six, dragged it home and insisted that we put it up in the living room. And she found some broken lights that the neighbors had lent her. And she's like, let's do Christmas. And I'm like, no, we can't do Christmas. We can try and block it away and say it's not around, but it is here. And kids want to do something fun and exciting and be part of it. And there's really no reason not to. I mean, what's the downside of making it into something big?
I just shake my head at this tendency that we have, because honestly, if we were to back out, I often put holidays or Jewish rituals or Jewish texts under this test that I kind of think of as the outsider text. Like, if I weren't Jewish and never had heard of this thing before, and somebody came up to me and said, like, this is a ritual that my family does, or this is a holiday, or this is a text, like, would I think it's interesting and worthwhile and something I'd want to do? Because I've had this experience with friends of mine who are Hindu or Buddhist, who are like, wow, that holiday sounds super awesome, or that teaching is really worthwhile. Like, to me, forgetting whether Hanukkah is or isn't major, like, okay, lighting an increasing number of candles over the course of 8 days in the middle of winter, and commemorating a mixture of various historical events, depending on who you ask, but commemorating this idea of light in a time that is dark, telling stories, playing games. We've got dreidel that's now, over the last few hundred years, become a major part of the holiday, and now also exchanging gifts. It passes that test. I think it's a cool, worthwhile observance that whoever you are, whatever your background, you would look at this and be like, I can get something out of that. And we have this tendency to try to push that away, because it's almost as if accepting the awesomeness of Hanukkah is like an act of betrayal to our tradition that hasn't elevated it so much. And with other rituals, by the way, that I think can also pass that test, but maybe not as easily, we like force them to work, even if they're more difficult. And I'd rather enter into a framework, as both of you are saying, that Hanukkah has taken on a really important place in our era. It may not be eternal, it may, but let's make the most of it.
I want to go through some of these ideas in sequence. So Alex, I want to come back to what you're talking about in a minute. I mean, just on the major minor point, maybe to wrap that up, and we'll come back to all of these, but you know, I want to at least say, and not everybody, of course, has to accept this, but I want to say this in the most radical way that I can think to say it, right? In Second Temple Judaism, the three major holidays were Sukkot, Passover, and Shavuot, the three pilgrimage festivals. Early rabbinic Judaism maybe added Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur to those. I mean, they're in the Bible, Yom Kippur more so than Rosh Hashanah in a more significant way, but rabbinic Judaism sort of elevated the status of those. So in a way, they've become sort of these four major holidays. But now, looking at 21st century America, it seems to me, and we've talked about this, Lex, the three major holidays are the high holidays, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, number one, Hanukkah, and Passover.
Without a question. If you look at Google and the searching, you definitely get that.
Yeah. Right. Those are the major holidays. And Sukkot and Shavuot are minor holidays. It's an interesting phenomenon that we do have three major Jewish festivals, just like we did in biblical times. They're just two out of the three of them are different. And I think that I put that out there for Hanukkah as a case study for our listeners to be able to see the extent to which Judaism has transformed itself in really profound ways, including the calendar. One of the most interesting pieces of Hanukkah this year is that the scheduling of Hanukkah is such that it is it runs from Christmas Eve being the first night of Hanukkah this year to New Year's Eve being the last night of Hanukkah. And I have to tell you, I think that scheduling is awesome. I think it is so great, and I'll tell you for two main reasons. Number one, is that as a parent of children, right, this is when my kids are off from school. So it's so wonderful, right? They're going to be able to celebrate Hanukkah with their grandparents, which they almost never are able to do. They are going to not that they would miss school for Hanukkah, but they're going to actually be able to be on vacation for Hanukkah, just like their non-Jewish friends are on vacation for Christmas. And a lot of people say, hey, if you want that kind of thing, you should move to Israel, where the calendar is the Jewish calendar. Okay, but I have a different idea, which is, how about we reschedule Hanukkah? Right, because the other piece that I would say is good about this scheduling this year is that so many Jewish families celebrate both Hanukkah and Christmas because the parents come from both backgrounds. And, you know, there's all kinds of issues that come up, like should about doing them separately. I think there would be some pretty amazing possibilities to imagine ways of doing them together. And then the relationship of Hanukkah and New Year's is, I think, so unexplored that we don't even have a lot of thoughts about it. But as I've been thinking ahead to it, you know, and thinking, wow, you know, if we think about Hanukkah as adding another candle every night, you know, and there's some culmination where the whole menorah is lit, you know, the idea that that's somehow New Year's Eve, right? And that actually the year of our whole society is turning over at the same time that our menorah is at its fullest, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities there. Now, we're not going to figure out all of those possibilities this year because it's the first year and I don't know when it's the next time this is ever going to happen. And Lex, you and I have talked in the past about the Jewish calendar being actually the Babylonian calendar and that the Jewish calendar is not as purely Jewish as you might think it is. And I'm wondering whether it's so radical to say, hey, you know, why don't we actually slightly reschedule the holidays by using the secular calendar, the Gregorian calendar, the American calendar, whatever you want to call it, as the calendar that we use to determine where the Jewish holidays fall. And that actually a pretty great way to schedule Hanukkah in that would be that it should always run from December 25th to January 1st.
So I have a large part of me that is entirely convinced by what you're saying. I have a large part of me that wants there to be communities of Jews that every year they live out Hanukkah from Christmas Eve through New Year's and play around with what that means and hone it and come to a place where they've like mastered some really awesome understandings of what that means for the observance of Hanukkah, how it shifts, what it retains, all of that. Here's what I am skeptical. Here's what I am worried about. Basically, I love that 3 years, I think it was 3 years ago, we had Thanksgivica. We had this crazy instance where Hanukkah began in November on the day of Thanksgiving. And we saw all sorts of things arise from this all over the Jewish world. There were articles, there were menorahs made, menorahs out of like turkey menorahs. There were all these discussions. And I was working for the Institute of Southern Jewish Life at the time. And we did all sorts of programs with kids where we talked about ways that Thanksgiving and Hanukkah can blend and all of this. And I thought that was cool. But I'm not saying that to say, oh, that means we shouldn't do this experiment with Christmas Eve to New Year's. I think we should. But I think if we're going to walk the walk of what we've been talking about on this show, where we're, you know, radically experimenting, what would it look like if we had a Jewish world where we enlisted a bunch of communities to do the Christmas through New Year's thing for Hanukkah, report back to in some sense. And you have another big cohort that sticks with this moving cycle and proactively, consciously says, okay, how can the fact that this year Hanukkah is December 3rd through December 11th be particularly meaningful? How can the fact that it starts on a Wednesday be meaningful? Like, I don't even know. To me, there is a great strength to the movement of the holidays. So I'm not ready to say I'm certain I'd shift, but I do think that we should try them and do this for other holidays too, and come to some conclusions and see where it leads us.
Well, I think that there, on some sense, Lex, what you've suggested is already happening in certain ways, right? There are a lot of families who, because exactly what you said, Dan, that you can't get together with the grandparents and light Hanukkah candles, you can't exchange gifts in person. So they wait until the kids are off school and then they have the big family Hanukkah party, or they have the big family gathering and they light a menorah, even though it's not the right time. And the rabbi might not agree, but it's happening in reality in a lot of families anyway. Or they're getting together for Christmas and then half the presents are wrapped for Hanukkah, whatever it's. So I think that there's a way in which it's happening de facto, even without it being officially there. Also in the public school system, right? There's a way in which whenever Hanukkah actually happens, it doesn't matter because the Hanukkah songs get sung at the holiday celebration, right? And on some level, it's already been moved to that time and to that into that calendar in certain spaces and public places. Now, I think that you're never going to get everybody to agree and to move that calendar, but I think that it's, Lex, that what you suggested about experimenting is already happening. I would say that there's a downside to having it all on during the same time as Christmas, because the downside to my mind is that, like, this year, all the programming that's happening is during family vacations. That means that whatever might happen in public Jewish spaces or in community spaces, you know, the Jewish Community Center, those kinds of things isn't going to be happening in the same way it normally does. And it won't be as well attended. It won't feel as, and I can imagine if you're, you know, at Hilton Head or skiing at Whistler or just gone to grandma's house, probably you're going to still have the latkes, but if you're in Whistler, you're not going to find latkes. So I think that there's a way in which I could see it working against the holidays too.
You know, what I really hope, and I don't know if our podcast is sort of an authoritative enough voice that it does this for people, right? But I would be looking for somebody to tell me, yeah, that's okay, right? Because, like, I kind of feel, right, it's okay to do your experiment, you know? It's you know, because I think about, like, when I put out a radical idea, like, we should reschedule Hanukkah on the secular calendar, so it's always from December 25th to January 1st, I expect that, like, quote, Jewish authority figures will tell me, you can't do that, that's not allowed, you know, that's not Jewish, you know, there's something deeply wrong with that. You can't change the days of the holidays. And maybe, you know, this piece that I'm hoping that we can somehow make available to people is some kind of seal of approval that says this is a legitimate Jewish thing to do, to try your experiment. You know, I may be skeptical about it, I might be in favor of it, but it's a legitimate thing to do, to try it out and see if it catches on.
I'm not sure that that's actually the way change is going to happen. I mean, if you're looking for a rabbi to say, yes, this is what you should do, or to an outside authority, I mean, I think that part of what the changes that happen in Judaism, they tend to follow what people are actually doing. It historically, going way, way back, Jews didn't keep kosher the way they do. They had one set of dishes they waited between, and eventually the practice, women said it was just too complicated. They separated the dishes, and then the rabbis followed suit. So, you know, I think that it's also important to remember that I don't know where the change comes from and who really gives the authority. Just like intermarriage, we said, rabbis were very clear, intermarriage is bad and you shouldn't do it. And people said, no, we're going to do it anyway. And now rabbis say, okay, let me come and bless your intermarriage. So I think that I'm not waiting on the rabbis or the podcast to tell me what to do. Me personally, I'm keeping it where it is because that works for me and my family. But I also recognize that I am one piece of a large puzzle. And if I think that my rabbinic authority means other people are listening to me, then they might be hearing, but they're not, it's an opinion, but it's not, there's nothing that makes it authoritative in an absolute sense in any way. I have a lot of different things that I've been thinking about having listened to those podcasts. And I guess, first off, I love the idea of the ascending lights. And I love the idea that we light those lights and we do it. You know, the historic idea is that the traditional idea is that every person in the family lights the lights, right? That every person has their own menorah. And there is something really empowering. You know, with the daylight savings time last night around 6:30, I said to my daughter, I'm ready to go to sleep. She said, of course you are. We're in hibernation mode, right? You know, it's hard. The darkness is hard. And darkness in general, whether it's emotional, spiritual, or physical darkness, is hard for most people. Like the you know, that heaviness of the winter. And the idea that every person lights their own lights and they have the power to increase the light in their own life and to give some sense of hope, I think it's physically beautiful, but it also feeds my soul just on that very primal level. And so that simple message of Hanukkah, I don't want that to get lost in whatever else we do or add, because I need that at this time of year. No matter what's going on politically, socially, emotionally, personally, I can always use a little bit more light. So that's my starting spot.
I was thinking the same thing. I've never been diagnosed, but I think if you were to look at seasonal affectivity disorder, SAD, I'm probably somewhere in that. I'm not severely stricken, but I'm somewhere on the spectrum of a real issue that people face, where the darkness comes in the winter and the cold, and it fundamentally shifts how you feel on a day-to-day level. And I think that what you're saying about elevating the literal light elements of the holiday, so often we allegorize and we jump from how this light is symbolizing how we can, you know, be a light in the world, or all of these great teachings. But there's also a literal truth to light and to fire. One of my favorite teachings I ever was taught, this isn't about Hanukkah lighting, but it's about how fire is the only thing, as far as I know, maybe scientifically there are other things, but it's the only common element of our lives that you can give to somebody without losing any of it yourself.
Love.
Yes. In terms of literal substance, fire, and I agree on love as well. That's maybe to some that feels a little cheesy, but I think it's a great message, and I think it could totally be a part of this holiday. And we don't even talk about fire. We talk about light. But this is a holiday of fire too. Today, a big part of me thinks that we need the symbolism of, you know, having a fire lit in us and really having a sense of urgency about the world around us and focusing in on that. And I think Hanukkah could be a great time to salvage that as well.
Okay, so I think we've dived into this, and so let's kind of keep going. You know, as I've been thinking about this in a practical way this year, you know, one of the things that I've been playing around with, partly because of my love of chemistry and partly because of trying to think about this idea, has been the one traditional idea of Hanukkah is in Aramaic called Pirsuma Nisa. It's the making public the miracle, right? It's the idea that the Hanukkah menorah should be placed in the window, because the goal of Hanukkah is not only for us to have this experience ourselves, but also for us to tell others of this experience. Now, the experience that is being talked about is one that I don't believe in, right? Is the idea that there was this supernatural miracle where a vial of oil was able to go for 8 days instead of the one day that amount of oil was supposed to do. Like, I believe that's a story. I don't believe that actually happened. I don't believe the rabbis thought that actually happened. But that may be going into a place where you don't need to go. But I do think that many Jews, and especially in our time of post-election, actually would like to be able to say publicly, I am Jewish. And, you know, I think that people do that by putting a mezuzah on their door traditionally. Some people that I've heard saying, you know, in Trump's America, I don't want to be afraid to be Jewish. I actually want to tell the world that I'm Jewish. I want to put myself in the space of the other minorities, because that is a strong Jewish tradition that I actually very much do want to pursue. I've heard people say, I'm going to start wearing a kippah now. And that's an interesting thing that we could talk about, another time. But the question that I have is, like, are there other ways? Because I don't want to wear a kippah right now, because it symbolizes for me things that I don't want to say about myself, you know, about sort of religiosity, whether that's what it symbolizes for everybody, that's what it would symbolize for me. And I wouldn't want that. But I'm thinking, but I would very much like to put a strong statement on my house that this is a Jewish house. And one way that I was thinking about that in terms of Hanukkah is, you know, is some version of lighting the menorah. But first of all, I don't have a window that really people can see. And second of all, the candles only last for a brief time. So that's where I got into the world of glow sticks. And I was like, you know, can I find, what is the biggest glow stick that I can find on Amazon.com? And, you know, can I buy, you know, whatever number of those that I need? And I put up, and we have pictures of this on our website, you know, that I put out a string on my porch. And, you know, every night I'm planning to hang another glow stick on there. And, you know, that's also very similar to Christmas lights. And so in that sense, it also kind of fits with the culture that I live in. But, you know, very much for me, and I'm not saying that's the answer as to how to do it, but very much like I'm really resonating with the idea, particularly this year, that Hanukkah provides an opportunity for me not to kind of hide my Judaism or pretend to be something else by, you know, integrating Christmas kind of experiences, which I also think is fine. But I want to specifically use it as an opportunity to say, I am a Jewish person, this is a Jewish house, and I've been looking for a sort of technology to do that.
Well, why would you limit it just to your house? I mean, you could also put something on your car. I mean, more people are going to see it if it's on your car or it's, you know, on your backpack or doing something, you know, like
absolutely,
those kinds of things. So, if you're going to push it, then I would push it even further.
No, and we have. And so I, you know, what we've, you know, again, we have some of these pictures on our websites, but in other projects that we've been working on. So we created a temporary tattoo of a menorah. And the idea is that every day you can add a candle onto it. First of all, that's interesting, right? Because tattoos are traditionally frowned upon in Judaism, not temporary tattoos, but still it's kind of a bit of rebellion too, but if one is inclined to do that. But the idea is that, even more so than the car, or maybe equally, is your body. And so are there ways that I can put something on my body that does this? Or we've experimented with nail decals, you know, but the question is like, also, what would it be?
I did put some temporary tattoos on my body over Rosh Hashanah, and right. I have to say nobody noticed or cared. So mm-hmm. that was entertaining. I thought it was going to be a big deal, but no. Yeah.
But this is a different goal, but did it make a difference for you to have those on?
Oh, it did make a difference for me personally, but very few people remarked or took a notice of it. So it's interesting. The question is also what's going to get attention and what kind of attention is it going to get the kind of attention? Is it just to say, you know, to me, just saying I'm proud to be Jewish is a good start, but it's not enough. I mean, I've been thinking a lot going back to the story of Billings, Montana, which is an American, you know, Yehuda Kurtzer was encouraging us to think really about our history and what we can learn from history. This is a modern story from 1993, but in 1993, Billings, Montana was rocked by racism because white supremacists moved into Billings and they were attacking Native Americans, blacks, and Jews. And after a five-year-old boy had a Jewish boy had a brick thrown through his window. I mean, the community had cleaned up the graffiti and tried to react, but after they broke his window, this five-year-old, the local newspaper printed a menorah in the newspaper, and then all sorts of people throughout the city put them up in their windows. And then it became a source of, you know, saying we are all identifying this way and we put themselves out there. It wasn't just we are Jewish and proud to be Jewish, but we are saying there was something more than that. Because for me, just to say, I mean, it's great to be, don't get me wrong, you want to be proud to be Jewish, it's wonderful, but let's do it in the service of something that's beyond ourselves, because otherwise I think it's not quite as meaningful. It's lovely, but it doesn't push us to that next level of really reimagining what the power of this holiday is. And to my mind, standing up against hatred, standing with other people is something even better. So maybe this year it might be putting a large safety pin in your front lawn, right? Saying I'm standing with other people, which is, it's a Hanukkah idea that the small stand against the mighty, that we resist attempts to quell identity, and we push it that way. So that might be, we put 8 safety pins in our front lawn over the days of Hanukkah.
This conversation that we're having, like, so what are the theoretical possibilities of future forms of Hanukkah that take existing ideas of it and pull them in new interesting directions based on our contemporary context, everything from the election to, you know, disorders that people have due to the time of year. Like, that's so exciting to me. And I want to pause and just like mention that and think and note that I think we should do it for virtually every ritual and holiday there is. Second thing is I'm just flashing to that moment where Ruth said, why would you stop at your home? Like, go to your car, like figure out a publicizing of, not the miracle for you, but publicizing of pride and Jewish identity channeled towards something
values
on your car, of light in your car, in whatever public spaces. And I'm doing what I always do and what listeners will maybe yell at me for, which is I'm thinking of the digital world too, because honestly, I, for a few years, had this struggle where I was living. So I was living in a place where I really wanted to own the public element of Hanukkah. I was in Jackson, Mississippi, where I lived for 2 years. I didn't experience anti-Semitism or anything. It wasn't because I was, you know, worried about my safety and wanted to express that I'm standing up in the face of that. But instead, I just wanted to show people like, hey, there are people celebrating Hanukkah in this place. And I wanted that public aspect to be important. But I was living in an apartment building where I had no outward facing window. There was no place that I could have put a menorah where people would have seen it. It didn't occur to me to do it in my car. I'm not used to that thought process. And I think that collectively, maybe there are people out there better at this than I am, but I think collectively we Jews are not thinking along those lines, so that it never occurred to me to do it in my car. But what I'm thinking now is, like, car is step one, but I have, you know, a Facebook profile that in many ways is like a place in the ways that rabbis would talk about places. I mean, we have email addresses online. We have websites, like we sightsee. Like, these are places that we go and visit, and we have people, hundreds of them, that view, you know, each one of ours Facebook page. Maybe only 10 of them like the posts, but it gets to many more news feeds. So what would it look like if Hanukkah was about that element of publicizing? And I love what Ruth said about channeling that, like, towards something, not just saying, hey, I'm proud to be Jewish, but, you know, each of the days, Jews around the country are posting, you know, 8 different things that they want to bring light to the world on. I don't know, whatever it would be. And I think that with the technology we have now, that would actually be very easy. And we already have precedent for people, you know, changing their profile pictures en masse to support a cause. But I think the digital side of it adds to it, too.
And if we then go back and we say, hey, we have these 3 major Jewish holidays of 21st century America, it feels to me like, in terms of thinking about the different functions of the 3, Hanukkah would be the one that is the most public, not only because people like it and it could be, you know, but because that is actually a traditional element of Hanukkah, that it's a public holiday, whereas, you know, the high holidays tend to be very private and internal, and Passover tends to be more, you know, family getting together. But Hanukkah is about a public statement, and we can really take that on in a new way.
Well, that's an argument for not moving the holiday to be in that week with Christmas, so that it has its own space and that we're not trying to really compete. I think that that would just, you know, as we're thinking it through actively. And I like this idea of having a moment of really pushing us as public Jews. And I think that on some level, that's what Chabad has done by putting Hanukkah menorahs in cities and squares throughout the country. Like it or not, I mean, there was a lot of pushback against it, but that's one of the things that they've done. And they've said, no, publicly, we want this recognized. We aren't willing to hide. And I think that at this particular juncture in time, people are really thinking about, what does that mean? How much do I want to hide? How much do I not want to hide? So there's an element of that being a great idea for us to be taking on and pushing forward, because not hiding is a really current theme. But I want to just push back a little bit, because I think that one of the things that allows Hanukkah and other Jewish holidays to continue and to keep working is that they have these pieces that are pretty basic, right? You know, you're just lighting candles. There's not a lot to this holiday. Then we add all sorts of other things like the food and the games and all of that, but there's not a lot there. What we do is imbue it backwards with a ton of meaning. And because we have that basic ritual, and then we're able to flex it, 20 years from now, my grandchildren are not going to be having the same conversations that you and I are having. They won't have the same spiritual and social needs that I have. And then if we only went, for example, to the safety pins, it would lose meaning and it would become a relic. By having something that's pretty malleable and flexible, then we're able to continually renew and reinvigorate. So I think that there's a value to keeping some of that old piece and then pushing that old piece to have new meanings and understandings.
So right, so that brings me to a technology question that also came up in our conversation with Burton Vysotsky, which was, you know, my concern is that taking the perspective that you just articulated, Ruth, as a given, right, that we should be retaining ancient rituals because they are malleable, especially simple ones. my concern is that most people, and I'm not, you know, casting the finger of blame here at people other than me. I mean, I'm saying including me, you know, generally don't spend the time thinking about what is the deep meaning of these things. As they just do them, especially the wonderful ones that people love, like lighting a menorah, because it's just wonderful, you know, and they enjoy it. And on the one hand, I don't want to take that away. I mean, it should just be wonderful and fun. And there's too little emphasis in Judaism about, like, we should just do it because we like it. But at the same time, I really think there's great power in spending this time like we are now trying to figure out the meaning, trying to ask, can we make this more meaningful, even if it's just for us and we know our children are going to do it differently. So one of the things that came up, and we were talking about it with Burton Vysotsky on this question of Hanukkah as potentially a holiday that, because of its proximity to Christmas, brings to light these questions of assimilation. How much should we assimilate? How little should we assimilate? You know, all that kind of thing. That actually there could be real power in like a Hanukkah Seder, where we actually get together one of the nights of Hanukkah with friends and family over latkes and other foods. And we could, you know, but we could actually have a conversation about these things, right? That becomes part of the new Hanukkah tradition, that we actually make sure that we are going to talk about the meanings of these things. Maybe it should be on the first night of Hanukkah or the second night, so that if we figure out something, we still have six nights left to do it, you know. But that's where, like, I you know, he said, well, maybe we should, you know, let's keep the Seder at Passover. And I'm not saying we should take the Seder away from Passover. I'm sort of suggesting almost that we should have a Seder as part of every Jewish holiday moving forward, or at least the major ones, because a Seder is actually a technology that people like. I think we should improve the Seder too in different ways. But like the idea of gathering together, but not just sitting around and having a meal with some conversation about the holiday is actually a pretty powerful technology.
Well, Dan, I agree with you. I think that having those conversations, I could imagine having a discussion guide that, you know, talk about Jewish pride one day, talk about the ways in which we connect and borrow from our neighbors another night. Because I'm not going to call it assimilation, because I think we, you know, assimilation has such a negative connotation, and the reality of borrowing and sharing, it goes, you know, as Burt Wasowski pointed out, is so deeply entrenched in everything Jewish that it's hard to separate it out in any way. To talk about that and look at it critically, I think all of those things are great. But I think that one of the pieces, and I struggle with this because I have an intellectual bent. I struggle with this because part of what works for people is that you don't have to overthink it. You don't have to know too much in order to do this. You can just go in there with a fairly simple approach and really enjoy some time together, some positive sense of Jewish connection without getting too deep. And that while that really works for you and maybe for me, I'm not sure it's going to work for everybody. So I don't know what that answer is. And I don't know what that looks like. We had a really great moment when my son was 3 years old. My brother-in-law was visiting and they were playing around. I said, you know, it's almost Hanukkah. I said to my brother-in-law, can you tell him the Hanukkah story? And my brother-in-law, who is a professor of ancient Jewish history, said, okay. And he started telling him the story of, like, you know, all the complex ideas of assimilation and history and stuff. And my kid is looking at him like, what are you talking about? I'm like, no, go with the dreidels, go with the menorah, go keep it simple, stupid. And like, let's just go with that stuff because that's what's going to work for him. But I think for a lot of other people, they want something fun. They want something light. They want something that they can be proud of. Jews fought back. There's a piece in which it does work for people. And I don't want to push so hard that we break what's working already, because on some level we've identified it as working. I'm also going to point out that there's also a Rosh Hashanah Seder traditionally and one for Tu B'Shvat, but we've already lost most of those for the most part. We don't talk about them, tend to, but so that there's a precedent, Dan, for your idea of having a Seder even at Hanukkah, because we've added the concept of having conversation and discussion at other holiday times as well. What kind of topics would we want to have brought in? What are the things that are the burning ideas that we would want that are unique to this holiday, or that we could connect to this holiday that we think we should be talking about? What are those?
Well, here's for me, I mean, this is an opportunity to bring in something. And I, to some extent, this is a short-term need, but nevertheless, I think it's a significant need. And the question is is it only a short-term need? Meaning, is this something that we actually needed before and didn't realize it and will need after, no matter what happens? And here I'm talking about Donald Trump's election. And I'm not looking at this from my perspective. I'm not trying to present something that's a partisan political perspective. I think Donald Trump is an issue of his own. And what's interesting to me is that in some of the Jewish writing since the Trump election, I feel like there's been a lot of talk about it as a version of the Purim story, right? Where Trump is Ahasuerus and Steve Bannon is Haman, and you know, maybe Ivanka is Queen Esther or something like that. And who's Mordecai is the big question. But I actually have found it to be a more resonant story of Hanukkah, you know, and that when, as we look at the story of Hanukkah, that essentially what was going on was a pretty crazy king had taken over the Assyrian Greek Empire, Antiochus Epiphanes, and you know, had a very high opinion of himself, which is why he called himself Epiphanes, you know, the manifestation of God on earth. And there were two groups of Jews basically falling over each other to try to curry favor with him. And the Hasmoneans, the Maccabees, as much as I don't agree with their vision of what Judaism should have been, I think that they were saying, both of you groups of Jews, either because you actually like Antiochus or because you don't like him, but you think the right strategy is to appease him, you know, and you guys are trying to, you know, figure out how to manage this guy best, we're going to come in and say, no, our values are against this guy. Right. And we are going to start a rebellion. And here again, I'm not advocating a physical rebellion, but I'm saying, like, philosophically, they're saying we are not going to play that game. Right. We are going to say that we stand for something and we are going to take it as our mission to make sure that something is able to survive this world. And to me, that is an amazing opportunity for re-understanding Hanukkah in the times in which we live. And I say this is not only for me about Donald Trump. You know, like, this is a recognition that maybe part of the problem that we have as a Jewish community is that we haven't been doing that up till now. You know, we've been proud of when there are some Jewish organizations that stand for certain values that we also believe in. But I think that many of us have not really put ourselves on the line to say these are our Jewish values and we are going to be the people in America that most strongly uphold those values and trumpet those values and publicize those values and internalize those values and do all the things that Hanukkah is about to remind ourselves year after year that this is who we are in the world. So, Lex, are there other, let's say, adult meanings and needs for Hanukkah that you are thinking about?
I think we underplay this element of increasing numbers of lights. And I think maybe I'm biased here because I am a numbers guy. I was a mathlete in high school, a math team, the whole nine. I thought I was going to major in math in college. And then I did the obvious thing and switched to Judaic studies, you know, the math Judaic studies shift. And I think that we've got this great chance in the spirit that, Dan, you've been talking about finding elements of other parts of the Jewish year that aren't as well known and sort of importing them to those that are. I think that the counting of the Omer, where you count up on a daily basis, is a really powerful thing, builds anticipation for the holiday of Shavuot. There's been all sorts of, you know, mystical interpretations put into it, ways to focus on character building, etc. I think that if we looked at the eight nights of Hanukkah as a form of ascension, as a process to look inward or and sort of check in with ourselves a few months after the high holidays and how we're doing in self-improvement, that could be one possibility. I think that could be powerful, and I think that ascending numbers is possible. The numeric aspect is that I think we could also use this as a chance to think, what are there three of that we care? What are there four of? What are there five of? What are there eight of? Like, those devices are really helpful and important. And if we could identify, you know, what are those core mnemonic devices of Jewishness or of human values that we want to bring to the forefront? I think of the song on Passover where we, who knows one, and you've got, you know, traditionally one is God, and then there's two tablets, and there's three fathers, all these things. What if we had something along those lines where Hanukkah reinforced some values that we share, and that could really resonate for adults that are looking to engage deeper with this kind of holiday?
Here's another lens into this. Like, I'm thinking, okay, if we accept that the three big holidays in Judaism now are the High Holidays, Hanukkah, and Passover, it's sort of like I want to think about, you know, what human needs and what Jewish needs those three holidays could fulfill, and then like what's missing, and then kind of which holiday should it get put on if it can be. So, for example, I'm thinking, the High Holidays are clearly introspective. What kind of a person am I? I feel like, right? Passover seems very much a holiday that is about family gathering together. In a sense, you know, what kind of a family are we? You know, Hanukkah, maybe you could say, well, that, you know, becomes the holiday of what kind of a people are we? I mean, that's a way of, that's, you know, I'm not asserting that. I'm just sort of like putting out there as an example, like that might be, you know, human beings need over the course of a year to consider who they are as an individual, who they are as a part of a family or a small community, you know, and then like who they are as part of a bigger community or the world, you know, and maybe Hanukkah is that world holiday. In the 21st century America, like we should have a holiday that is really about our place in this mixed multitude, you know? And if we didn't inherit a holiday like that, maybe we should create one. And if we are creating one, you know, both because it's our tradition to do this and because, you know, it kind of makes sense, you know, let's not just make a new holiday to experience that. Let's actually just say, yeah, Hanukkah is the holiday closest to that idea. So let's make Hanukkah that holiday.
Well, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is adding in a day of service in the Hanukkah celebration, right? That you have 8 days, you're always going to have a Sunday in there. And sure, you can do something at the Hebrew school, but you could also go with your family like we do for MLK Day in our family. We go to the food pantry, we give back to the community. I mean, there's a way in which we can say we want to be out there in the community actively as Jews, bringing literal, you know, figurative light, but also literal lightness to something in the community. And I think that could be a really positive piece for families and, you know, and young people. There's no age on that one. In our community here in Atlanta, we have an organization that was started by a Jewish woman where kids go with their families and do, you know, create packages for other people. And I could imagine doing, you know, 8 days of going and doing eight different packages or creating things. And I think that that's, or doing something good for people over 8 days. And I think that this is a time of service, could be another way of literally bringing light out into the world. You know, there is a Jewish Moms of Atlanta. I live here in Atlanta, and there's a very active Jewish Moms of Atlanta Facebook group. And I put something out there about what do people do for Hanukkah, and people have been asking and having deep and interesting conversation about dealing with a lot of the issues that we're talking about in various ways. And, you know, there are people do spend time, especially, you know, in this case, it's moms, but they are actually spending time thinking about it. There are families who give money to their kids every night, but then the money has to go, the kids have to decide what cause the money's going to go to, so that they're having an active conversation. So some people are doing this, and it's important to recognize that it's already being done. And then, you know, to recognize, like, the question is, how do we start collecting that wisdom? What's working, other than sharing it individually, mom to mom, or in this case, but in other, you know, or getting a big organization to promote it. So, you know, that's another question for me, is how do we move it beyond being a quirky thing that Dan does to being something that Dan, Lex, and Ruth do, to being something that Jews do? And I, you know, that's another whole piece of it, because I think some of these conversations are happening, maybe not, again, where are they happening, and how are they happening is a It's a question that's interesting to me. And I think online, going back to our earlier conversation about that being a real space for Jews, I think they are happening online on websites like Kveller. Moms are having interesting conversations about what they do, what they practically do at Hanukkah, at the different holidays. And they share those ideas. And some of them are, you know, practical. This is the craft I do with my kids. And some of them are much deeper, philosophical. These are the issues that I'm talking about with my kids this holiday.
Yeah. So in conclusion, we just want to reinforce for our listeners that on our website, www.judaismunbound.com, you can see a web-based set of resources that Lex and I have put together, done our best to put some ideas out there. But we absolutely, look, it'll be a sense of success and it'll make me feel good to hear that somebody actually tried out my idea and thought it was awesome. But really, what we want to do with all this is inspire you to say, hey, that's a good start. It's actually a pretty lousy idea, but I have a better one. And I'm going to try that out because I wasn't thinking that I was going to be able to do that. But this is a great spark to do that. And then to let us know after Hanukkah what you actually did and how it worked. And we're really excited just about the idea that people can start to think about what it means to live a Jewish life in a new way, which is fundamentally about saying, yeah, I'm empowered to look at this material, reverse engineer it, think about what's needed, mix it all up. That's what has been done from time immemorial with Judaism, and that's what can start again. So we're really excited to use Hanukkah 2016 as a example of that, to try it out. Ruth and I are excited to come back next year, launch date to be determined, with a new podcast series that's going to be doing this more broadly for all the holidays. And then I think when we finish the holidays, we're going to move on to other Jewish rituals and other Jewish stuff. So, 5 years from now, we'll have everything you need. Thank you, Ruth, for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure having you. And we just want to really wish everybody a happy Hanukkah Unbound.
That's right. We would love to wish everybody a happy and, of course, an unbound Hanukkah. And we're going to close out our episode, as always, by encouraging you out there enjoying Hanukkah to also, as you enjoy it, please, please be in touch with us now more than ever. Let us know what funky rituals you're bringing to your menorah lighting, to your Hanukkah observance. And you can be in touch with us in a few ways. One is through our Facebook page, Judaism Unbound. Second is through our website, judaismunbound.com. Third is through our email addresses, lex@nextjewishfuture.org and dan@nextjewishfuture.org. One last plug for Hanukkah Unbound, which is our online set of Hanukkah resources and activities for you to do with your family, your loved ones, your friends, yourself, whoever you want to. And you can access that at judaismunbound.com/Hanukkah. All of our spellings of Hanukkah are H-A-N-U-K-K-A-H. So thanks again for listening. And with that, this has been Judaism Unbound.